Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media Linux panel discussion, Challenges and Solutions for Today's New Technology Advances. I'm Kurt Schwader, Technical Editor at Open Systems Media, and today's moderator with panelists Glenn Seiler from Wind River and Steve Balocco from VDC Research Group. I'm personally really excited about today's event. It's an open forum panel discussion where our panelists have graciously allowed me to cry on their shoulders about my own Linux challenges and opportunities. I've sent them my question list a while back. They've provided some support slides for each question that we'll be going through today. Now, maybe my questions address yours or maybe not. So if they don't, you have a great opportunity to ask your own questions as well, and we certainly encourage you to do so. Now, before we begin, I want to go through some housekeeping with your user interface. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fit your entire screen. The Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this ECAS so they can also attend. Now, here's the interactive part. There's an Ask a Question text box and Submit Question button. It allows you to participate by typing your question into the text box and submitting it by clicking on the button. There'll be a 10-minute Q&A period at the end, but we'd invite you to submit questions at any time during the ECAST while it's fresh in your mind, and we'll do our best to address them. If you have a question or problem pertaining to the ECAST operation itself, you can submit that as well, and our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the discussion. We have a survey at the end as well. So after the Q&A portion, we invite you to fill out the survey pop-up that pops up on your screen. We really appreciate that you do that. It really helps the participants and gives us a lot of good information. And this event will also be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio podcast will also be made available. More details on this at the end. So let's get to our panelists. Our panelists are Glenn Seiler, Senior Director of Linux Product Development at Wind River Systems, and Steve Balocco, Director of Embedded Software and Tools Practice with VDC Research. Glenn is responsible for creating and managing Linux and open source product initiatives. Glenn has been the operating systems industry for 30 years and has a strong advocate for open source and open standards. He was one of the original members of the Carrier Grade Linux Work Group, and he is also a contributor of the Scope Alliance Carrier Grade OS Committee and is on the board of directors for the Open SAF Foundation. Prior to Wind River, Glenn held director of product management positions at Monta Vista Software and BSDI and product management roles at SCO and Texas Instruments. Glenn holds a Bachelor of Science degree from Stephen F. Austin and a Master's in Computer Science from Texas State. Steve Balocco has more than 9 years of experience conducting market research studying and managing all of the market research programs for VDC's embedded software development practice. His project-related experience includes coverage of a number of embedded software technologies for syndicated research, including embedded operating systems, software development tools, Java, databases, and Linux, Windows embedded and test automation tools. He's conducted and managed consulting research projects focusing on market and technology assessments, channel development initiatives, and market penetration, competitive analysis, and due diligence. He has a deep knowledge of a wide range of embedded software technologies that we'll be hearing about today, their applications, and related customer requirements. He holds a BSBA from Eastern Nazarene College. Without further ado, we'll get to a little intro for my personal experience. First, a snapshot of the global economy. It's gaining momentum. Over the past two quarters, earnings reports are showing increasing profits, and consumer confidence is definitely on the rise. The Dow has risen 7% this year, if you didn't know it. That's the best start in 12 years. Industry projects that were on hold are now moving forward again, keen to make up for lost time. So, you know, where does this leave your development team? Well, if your experience is like mine, you feel like our friend here in the upper right-hand corner where you're staying up all night in vain in attempt to keep up with in order to keep up with the opportunities that lie ahead. But the fact of the matter is many companies are staffed to the minimum coming out of this recession. So how do you take advantage of these new and exciting opportunities? On the long term, your company is probably looking at staffing up or maybe adding some experienced contractors. But what do you do in the short term? Because in times of minimal resources and booming opportunities, companies usually have to look to focus on their core competencies. So that means, like in my company, we're looking at all of our development resources and making sure we're focused on what makes our product unique. It's also a matter of working smarter, like what kinds of tools and products can make the team more efficient. In times like these, maybe everything is being looked at across the board. Like, you know, where should your development be focused? Where can we outsource? What makes sense to buy and integrate? Now, most people think of Linux as a one paradigm kind of thing. You're getting open source code and you're leveraging community development to build your differentiating software on top. But, you know, lately things have advanced well beyond these delivery models, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Before we begin, I'd like to define the term roll your own or RYO. Now, back in the 90s, we used this term for companies that created their own simple task manager on a, or a threaded kernel. You know, this is opposed to buying a commercial real-time operating system like VxWorks or OS9 or something. For purposes of this discussion, though, we're using RYO to mean Linux development where the raw code is taken in some form from some place, you know, pieces assembled, integrated, tested, customized for the platform, you know, then ready to add to your product application software. So roll your own has varying degrees from getting it in its most raw form from the open source community all the way up to and through receiving a polished, integrated, supported Linux build from a commercial Linux provider. All of these options have their place, and it depends on the level of experience and desire to devote the resources toward the development of OS software. I'd like to begin my question by, you know, asking Glenn to jump in here, and maybe you can provide us an overview of what the range of buy versus build choices are for us.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you, Kurt. In my experiences, I've seen each of these options used, quite frequently. The reality is that very few businesses really actually use kernel.org as a starting point. You know, kernel.org, you know, most of you probably know this, is sort of the ground zero for the Linux kernel. And that's where all of the kernel developers and contributors contribute their code, but kernel.org is not really a Linux distribution. It is really just the kernel itself. More often, businesses who do want to roll their own would start from a free distribution of some sort, and that's usually aligned with their specific type of device or project that they're building. So, for example, Open Embedded Linux is an embedded Linux distribution which may appeal to businesses that are developing highly embedded devices, while Fedora is an example of a free Linux distribution that may appeal to companies that are working on appliances or server types of devices. So whether you're looking at an Open Embedded or a Fedora, you're really looking at a complete Linux distribution. Now, the other alternative is semiconductor Linux, what I call semi-Linux. And the appeal of semiconductor Linux is that it's provided directly by a semiconductor vendor and usually has very deep hardware support. This option will often give businesses the best opportunity for getting up and running quickly on a particular piece of hardware. Yeah, the downside, as we'll discuss later, is that, you know, it's typically not as robust a distribution. It typically does not have the tooling that you might find in a more full-featured distribution. And then there's consortia Linux. I call this sort of, you know, broadly consortia Linux, which is also used for application-specific devices such as automobile infotainment, which may use something called Genevi, which is a Linux specification by a consortia of automobile manufacturers and platform providers servicing that market. Of course, we all know about the tablet, smartphone markets, which might use an Android type, or LIMO, which is another consortia for handsets. So all of these are sources where businesses may get their Linux and take advantage of using software designed for a specific purpose. But then there's the commercial suppliers like Wind River and others. And, of course, there's many advantages to using a commercial Linux. The most obvious and probably the most important is the level of technical support, service level agreements, and expertise that a commercial distribution can provide for businesses, especially businesses who you said earlier are staffing to the minimum, need to focus on their core competencies. They may have many different product lines using Linux, and the more Linux they have in use, the more the company's going to find that they may not want to maintain their own operating system staff. So those are sort of the four main categories that I see of Linux in the market today.
Great, thanks. It didn't even really occur to me. I guess I was slicing it kind of from the level of raw to finish, but it actually is kind of grouped into application, modules per application then too. Is that correct?
It is, and again, it really depends on whether you're taking a highly vertical approach, like the automobile or the handset industry, or whether you're taking a very hardware-centric approach, and then you're going to want to focus on perhaps a semi-vendor, if you really do want to just build the pieces all yourself, then you kind of go to kernel.org and you integrate each component individually. And different businesses have different ways that they want to approach. And then, of course, the commercial supplier has the advantage of servicing all these different markets, and as well as providing deep hardware support. And again, the commercial support is one of the key benefits of looking at a commercial supplier.
Right. Interesting. Okay, my next background question was for Steve. From a market perspective, I've witnessed the evolution of operating systems from, simple kernels, homegrown, in-house, then people want to focus on core competencies, so they go to commercial real-time operating systems. Then the pendulum swings back a little bit. Look at this free thing we can get from the open source community to leverage lots of an army of developers and familiarization. And now I think the pendulum may be swinging from what I feel back to, let's look at a commercial version of an open source distribution to, again, focus on our core competency, yet leverage the familiarization and the ability to focus on our core competencies with Linux. Steve, can you speak to that?
I certainly can. Today, as Glenn was talking about earlier, engineers today have more choices than ever before. The way they go around their selection criteria, it really can be based on any number of dimensions, where they believe their core competencies exist, the cost, the investment costs, the type of processors that they need to have supported, the tools that they're interested in using as part of their development, really the functionality and the support that they require from the operating system. And of course, all of this leads to a build versus buy paradigm, which is always an option within engineering organizations. So what you're looking at here is an exhibit that comes from the latest VDC Embedded Engineer Survey. I apologize if it's quite busy, but on the left-hand side is the type of OSs which we categorize used in development projects. And it's really classified by the previous project that the engineers worked on, their current, and what engineers might expect to use in the next project in the future. Should also note from this exhibit here that it is possible for engineers to cite the use of multiple OSs that would be included in the development of their device and system. So based on VDC scope, Linux is included as part of the two open source categories that I've circled on the exhibit to the left. And you can see from this exhibit that there is increasing use and future interest in open source from the engineers that we're interviewing, which, by the way, has been consistent since VDC started to cover Linux in the embedded market back in 2001. when you look at these two categories that are circled here, the use of Linux represents more than 25% of all current development projects within our survey. What we also have observed since VDC has covered Linux is that over time, the use of commercially available Linux distributions has continued to increase year over year from our survey results. And we expect that this growth has really been reinforced by the continued maturation of the ecosystem around Linux and the result of continued recognition in the increasing sophistication and complexity of software for the devices that are under development. Of course, there's increased pressures for time to market. There's pressures in terms of engineers requiring a more efficient product development environment. And it's also a recognition that core competencies need to be directed to what really adds value and innovation to the devices under development. In addition, as project development teams migrate from using no formal or in-house developed operating systems, which you can see within the slide, we expect that Linux has the opportunity to gain even further adoption going forward as engineering teams look to move to a more formal a commercial or a roll-your-own Linux solution. So what types of Linux offerings do we see being used from our survey results? Well, for commercial Linux, there's a very broad array of environments from most of the major suppliers that you can think of that have a commercial distribution available. There's also a very broad variety with respect to the roll-your-own, or what we call public Linux. And here we're seeing Debian, Fedora, Slackware, and a host of other environments that engineers are using as part of their, what they consider to be their roll-your-own environment. Interesting chart on the right really puts it into perspective with respect to the use of Linux. By the total number of engineers at the company. So the more engineers, as you look at this exhibit, the more engineers at the company, the greater the likelihood will be that they will be using a commercial Linux distribution. The smaller the size of the engineering organization, the more likely they are to use a roll-your-own or a public Linux solution. And this is clearly related to CapEx, where these smaller engineering organizations might have limited resources upfront to invest in commercial solutions and support and look to do it the old-fashioned way.
Right. Interesting. Well, thanks for that. I would now comes the part where I kind of detail the question, and I know that you guys have prepared kind of a combination of slides. So the first question here is really delving into what exactly is the impact in terms of, you know, my most important criteria like time to market, capital and operational expense, our ability to compete in the marketplace. I asked this question of Glenn and Steve. They've sent me a few slides. Glenn, how about you start, and you can steer me through the slides you've created.
Sure. Thanks, Kurt. We're going to get into more detail in each of these as we go through the presentations, but and there's really three sort of primary business issues. When I go in and I talk with my various clients and customers about what they're doing with Linux and their projects, and it's always, you know, everyone wants a time-to-market advantage, and of course they always want to lower their costs and have a competitive product. What I've seen, though, is time-to-market always seems to be the one most important business issue of those three that they focus on. But one of the things you have to be careful about, and I see this all the time, is you can't confuse time to market with time to start a project. And many companies and businesses are lured by the vision of getting a Linux that immediately supports their hardware and they're ready to go, and it doesn't cost them anything. And so the time to start can be very very short. But what you find then is that, you know, semiconductor vendors and public Linux are not really in the operating system business, and they don't provide the troubleshooting and support services, which is where you get into trouble with projects and where the long delays can start to occur. And you don't, of course, have the tools that you need to properly troubleshoot or tune for maximum performance, which is going to drive your product competitiveness. So that takes you to product competitiveness, and that's not just performance. It's also quality. It's rich features besides the hardware support, things like security and real-time and high availability. All of these add to creating a competitive product and add to the complexity of building your own Linux. So you have to consider all these costs. And on the next slide, I mention some of the different aspects of Linux that can have an impact on the three business issues: time to market, costs, and competitiveness. So I've compiled this list, and I discussed this with my customers who are considering making a roll your own or build versus buy decision. One of the most important is tools, and we're going to spend some time on that. But there's many tools available in open source. But I hear all the time, we're just a command line company. We just use command line tools. We use what's available in open source, and that's fine. But many tools in open source today don't support the capabilities of the new multi-core processors. They're not fully functional on all architectures. Maybe features such as tracing, for example, may not be available on a MIPS or an ARM processor, et cetera. So you have to look at the overall capability and productivity of tools. I think that's one of the most important ones. And then, we've talked about multi-core and its impact, and that also will have a strong impact on a company's ability to take advantage of new technologies. One of the biggest items that's almost always overlooked is the various aspects of managing open source and the obligations associated with open source. For example, what open source practices does an organization have for the open source that they may include in their product? Do they understand the obligations of making that source available, the requirements or whether or not you want to move modifications upstream? And for many businesses, if you do modifications to source, this can become a very costly area. But as we stated earlier, every business is going to have different variations on whether they actually modify the source code or they just, sort of use it as is. So every business is going to have to look at their own situation individually. They have to look at how they're going to manage patches and so on. You also need to look at your security requirements and your standards compliance requirements. And oftentimes these can require a lot of additional development, certification costs, maintenance costs. And so anything that's not a part of standard Linux, if you will, or kernel.org, things such as real-time security, these are all going to have to be integrated, validated. Dependencies on different packages will have to be checked. And, of course, it'll all have to be supported. So this can add a lot of OPEX costs, not only in terms of development, but integration and testing dependencies. And then finally, if your project that you're building has any requirements for third-party software, I cannot think of too many third-party software vendors in the industry today that support a semiconductor or a kernel.org Linux. Usually these third-party vendors are looking for a commercial supplier they partner with, so they have clear support paths of their own so that you can create a partnership between a Linux supplier and an ISV to provide a fully integrated and well-supported solution for businesses who need that. So you have to look at all of these aspects of a Linux distribution, and most of them apply to longer-term OPEX costs. And all of them will have some impact on time to market as well. And the next slide I show is, I like this slide because it kind of gives you a graphical view. Now, in this case, I'm really just comparing semiconductor roll-your-own Linux against a commercial Linux. And, you know, you can see that in most cases, a semiconductor Linux is always going to have as good or better support for the features of a particular processor. That's what I show in the second column. And the orange color represents the semiconductor vendor. However, you know, most of these vendors, the semiconductor processor vendors, will make their patches or whatever code they optimize for their processors, they will make that code available to the Linux community. And a commercial vendor is going to pick up that code and integrate it into their commercial distributions as well. Now, granted, there's usually going to be some small time-to-start advantage in terms of getting the project up and running if you do start with that, with a semiconductor Linux. But that's usually where the advantage ends, because then you look at all the other aspects of the distribution, the support, troubleshooting, the runtime environment extensions such as securities, high availability, things of that nature. Tools, semiconductor vendors usually don't invest in any kind of, you know, highly productive tools, and they don't extend the open source tools. And then there's the distribution, the roadmap, the lifecycle management of doing regular updates and upgrades and managing a lifecycle of a distribution. And all of these characteristics and attributes of a distribution will ultimately impact the overall, you know, time to market and costs.
Interesting. So you mentioned tools, so let's move on to that. That's one of my questions. Next,
Kurt?
Sure.
Yeah, I was able to put together some stats on this particular topic, and I thought it might be of particular interest here to the audience itself. You know, in general, you know, the functionality really needed from today's software has continued to rise as businesses and devices really rests more of their value and functionality from the software as opposed to the hardware. I mean, this has really resulted in continued increases in the amount of software that we're seeing in the development projects themselves. What we're also observing within development projects is that engineers are spending more time really on tasks beyond what their primary responsibility or discipline would be within the team itself. This could be a function of limited manpower or really just the evolution and the expectation that engineers within these development teams need to be multidisciplined in terms of the skills that they bring. But here's some stats that I pulled from the survey, which I thought were quite interesting. In comparing a commercial Linux project to a roll-your-own project, and what we're seeing here is the total cost of development for the average total cost of development for a commercial project was around $800,000, and roll-your-own was close to $1.2 million. We're seeing the percentage of the total cost of software development for commercial to be about 56% versus 54% for roll-your-own. Time to market, which we define as the time from initial specification to shipment of the product, is about 11 months for a commercial Linux project as opposed to 17 months for a roll-your-own project. Team size is generally larger for a commercial project than a public or a roll-your-own project. But here's the stat, I think, which is really interesting. With using commercial Linux distribution, projects are greater than 60% on or ahead of schedule, as opposed to those projects that are using roll-your-own that are slightly less than 50% on or ahead of schedule. Now, you know, that's not bad. 50% is not it's not bad. But when you consider the costs and the delays in these projects that they represent in terms of additional operational expenses, maybe lost time in market, it really is it's a significant, potentially significant costs to these development teams.
Interesting. So yeah, I guess it does. There are some hard facts behind commercial versus roll your own. It kind of mirrors way back when people were motivated to go from roll your own kernels to commercial operating systems in the industry back in the early 90s. The tools. So we mentioned the tools, and that's an important ingredient here. I'm used to using a combination of, syslog, inline test instrumentation code, and sometimes the GNU debugger. But there are some bugs that just don't lend themselves to being easily identifiable through these methods. And Steve, maybe you can elaborate on the kinds of tools that are available that commercial Linux providers might be providing these days.
Well, in general, within the tool space, what we're seeing from these development projects is pretty extensive use of Eclipse and GNU-based tools. This is what we continue to see to be used by the project development teams. This trend, we believe, continues to be driven in part by development teams, preferring to use low-cost or no-cost open-source solutions. However, because these tools offer, really a convenient entry point for commercial solution providers looking to offer, competitive high-quality tools to their customers, the commercial market is also really helping to drive this move toward open-source platforms and in turn improving the quality of free and publicly distributed software. We also observe that there really is a broad use of development and lifecycle management tools across both the commercial and roll-your-own development teams. This includes a broad variety of tools, compilers, debuggers, JTAG debuggers, in-circuit emulators, editors, build tools. However, within the commercial Linux development projects, we also observe really a greater use and investment in more sophisticated tools such as static analysis tools, software and system modeling tools, as well as various lifecycle management tools such as project management, requirements management, build analysis, and build release management tools. So these, what we're seeing here is that larger budgets are available for tool investment. And additional value is placed from commercial Linux users on investing in premium tools that they believe can increase productivity, quality, and time to market.
Glenn, can you walk us through what kinds of advancements there are for Linux tools and that make development on Linux better?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So, I think one of the first things is you need to look at multi-core support because, nearly every project nowadays is using some kind of multi-core processor, and having a commercial toolbox for things like JTAG debuggers and debuggers that can debug both user space and kernel space at the same time and provide a multi-context debugging that allows you to debug through multiple connections, whether it's serial or Ethernet or whatever, and debug multiple processes on multiple cores at the same time is a really strong requirement. And we're even seeing the requirement to debug multiple operating systems, not Linux and perhaps some kind of RTOS, because typically businesses are migrating some legacy application and they want to use multi-core and virtualization and hypervisors and then debugging through a hypervisor. All of this increases the complexity significantly of how you use debugging tools today. The standard open source debug tools just weren't designed for that kind of an environment. Now, granted, they're getting better. But one of the things that I wanted to kind of run you through here was an example of what we're doing at Wind River. for our tools. One of the things Steve said earlier was, you know, open source tools provide an entry point for commercial providers, and that's exactly right. You know, we as a commercial supplier, we use standard open source tools because we realize that that's, you know, the tools that developers are going to use. So I like to use this OProfile as an example. OProfile is a static analysis tool that allows you to do performance analysis and consumption analysis of how the system's consuming CPU and things of that nature. So we take the standard same OProfile that anyone would take in the community, but we add additional capabilities to it, such as the ability to do back traces across system boundaries, from kernel space all the way up into user space. We make sure that it has the same functionality across all architectures and hardware support. And then we take this and we integrate it into our performance profiler, you know, Eclipse-based GUI presentation tool. And so then, you know, on the next slide, I like to show this. This is the result that you would have if you just used OProfile as a command line tool. And it's typical command line output. It's a very rich tool, has a lot of command line options, and a large, complex set of data, literally, you know, megabytes of data that you get. Now, on the next slide, you'll see the same output, but in this case, it's done through our commercial profiler. So here you have a screenshot of live profiling, and you can see that there's, you know, call stack trees that you can easily expand and collapse, and the different colors reflect different routines, and we provide a system view, a functional view, a process view, and the end result is, you know, a highly productive tool that is, again, based completely on open source tools, but it's extended in its capability and enhanced by putting into this user interface. And we actually do this for all of the open source tools, mProfile or mPatrol and printf and LTT and all the other tools that developers might be used to. We add this same kind of what we call embrace and extend philosophy to actually augment the open source tools and make them more productive, therefore saving time to market and OPEX costs on development.
Right. Okay. So if you're a graphical kind of guy, this part of the value add of a commercial is kind of a graphical, pull it all together kinds of things that you would normally be doing on the command line with, you know, Linux tools.
Right, and we're not religious about this, right? So if you know, we have organizations that insist that they have to be command line, and that's fine, and we provide all the standard command line tools. But then there's others that do see the value and want to take advantage of these kinds of tools. And I'd say that it's probably about 50-50 in terms of organizations that use command line versus want to use these more productive graphical environments.
Okay. So let's talk about technology advancements. I know that my company's dealing with new versions of processors, certainly multi-core processors. Our systems tend to have multiple processors in them, so message passing, inter-process communication is important. There's drivers happening all the time, you know, with new I/O chips, new platforms and board support packages. And in addition to all that, there's security requirements that you have to worry about, like patches and things. Sometimes I get patches that do security updates, and, you know, I'm not sure whether this is going to affect my product and when I put it in or break something or I need it or what. So how does this affect Linux and versus what I should be aware of with roll your own versus commercial?
Okay, so I'm sorry. I'm not sure if that was directed towards myself or Stephen.
I guess I guess this slide is the technology disruptors slide. I think Steve sent that in.
Yes, yes, I did. Again, to the audience, what you're looking at here is some data from our survey from last year, and you can see what's happening, how the market is evolving relative to the characteristics of the processors that are being used in the design projects. And so you can see how expectations of engineers are changing in terms of whether they expect to use a single processor or a multiprocessor or even multi-core. And so multi-core adoption, while it has been somewhat slow, it is picking up. We're starting to see it a lot more within the projects that engineers are citing to us. And their expectations within the future is where they expect it to grow. So, you know, both multi-core and virtualization really have been trends that we've been following closely within the embedded market. The evolution and really the adoption of both of these technologies, while still small, is growing and really expected to continue to increase over the next several years. So, you know, migrating to new processor technologies can be a challenge for engineering teams using a roll-your-own type of Linux. If support is not readily available from the open source community, you know, adding new features to products in general increases the complexity and the functionality, you know, of the software. And in some cases, involves engineers investing time in OS technologies really that are really transparent to the end user, you know, rather than spending their time and concentrating on their core competencies of developing discriminating device features. Use cases exist today for virtualization technology as a means to really ease the migration. That's one of the benefits, ease the migration to a new hardware architectures, and or the reuse of legacy software where they may have significant investments. Virtualization's ability to really partition systems for hard real-time security and or even mission critical types of applications is really expected to continue the adoption of Linux as a guest operating system running in a virtual machine. This all comes back to the build versus buy paradigm. Do I do it myself or do I partner with a commercial supplier? I have this increased time to market pressures bearing down on me, and maybe have less staff than been available to work on the project today than ever before. You know, what can I do to improve my product development efficiency? If I do it myself, can I keep pace with a fast-changing silicon environment, as well as other new emerging technologies? I just wanted to take a quick second here because I was talking with an engineering organization not too long ago, and they had developed and shipped a device based upon Linux, a roll-your-own type of Linux. And during the course of the discussion, it came out that they were using a very old kernel. I asked them why they hadn't moved to the new one, which they had suggested had some enhancements that they would like to take advantage of. And the answer that came back to me was quite striking and very appropriate for this conversation. They couldn't do it because they didn't have the resources, the time, or the money to go back and revalidate all of the software that they had developed under a new kernel. And so they were stuck at that kernel level. So, you know, commercial Linux suppliers dedicate really a significant portion of their budgets to ongoing research and development, and they look to offer support beyond the traditional OS boundary and support a host of microprocessor architectures and integrated development tools to really help make software development and debugging more efficient. In this approach, developers really don't need to be distracted by non-core competency tasks of assembling and maintaining and supporting a Linux solution and trying to incorporate support for new requirements, but leverage really a commercial solution provider and focus on innovation of their products that they have under development.
Yeah, and Kurt, if I could just add, I'd like to maybe just add one anecdote to this. You know, when I go in and talk to customers, especially in aerospace and defense and networking market segments, I would say at least 80, if not 90% are all developing on newer multi-core processors. And, you know, I remember specifically talking to one, you know, large, you know, networking account, and they're using, you know, four core processors. They told me they're using one core out of four core processors. They're using one core because, as Steve had just said, their applications have not been re-architected to take advantage of this multi-core. So that goes back all the way to the previous slides that we showed about product competitiveness. And, you know, are you really developing a competitive product when you're using one core or you're using an application that was architected for older processors? And yeah, you might get a little bit of performance increase because of the newer processors, but you're not taking advantage of this, of the new technologies. And same for virtualization. And you know, that's one of the things that Steve said. We at, you know, at Wind River in particular, all of our you know, new technology strategies are focused around multi-core and virtualization and hypervisors and these new technologies and helping companies to realize the real maximum benefit that they can from this new technology.
Okay, so open source, the open source distributions tend to lag commercial operating system vendors of Linux in key technology areas like this, or is it maybe or maybe not answer?
Well, it's not black and white, and a lot of these new multi-core technologies are also doing things like providing offload engines for encryption or compression or, you know, different capabilities, especially in the networking market, any kind of communications. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, it's very complex drivers and libraries and APIs. And, you know, one of the things that we do is we work with all of the semiconductor vendors to make sure that we support these architectures, that our Linux has been validated with their with the drivers that are necessary to support these engines. And, you know, doing that kind of development effort strictly on your own, while, I mean, it could be done, certainly, but as Steve had pointed out earlier, the time-to-market impacts can be pretty significant.
Right. Okay. So the moral of the story is you better check the distribution that you're going to use, and maybe or maybe not it's ahead of where you need to be or behind, and the answer is to know what your requirements are and go look at the distributions and the commercial vendors and see what fits your application best, I suppose.
Absolutely. And consider the tools, as we've already discussed as well, and whether they're optimized for a multi-core type of environment and hypervisors and things like that.
Okay. In terms of the security, can you talk to me about these security patches and what are the implications of open source, you know, unstable versus stable RPMs, and when I integrate those, what are my risks versus if I'm at a commercial release, what are the risks?
Well, boy, so security is an ever-growing concern, and there's increasing requirement. Security is an increasing requirement with nearly every business I speak to. There's a lot of aspects. So the security patches, you know, in terms of integrating them, you know, it's in a lot of ways they might be just like any other patch, and you have to make sure that the patch that you integrate is compatible with the version of the kernel that you have, and so on. So that's definitely one of the complexities of integrating security patches. But I think another key complexity is which security patch do I integrate, and how do you know if a particular security patch applies to you? And you know, if your product requires a certain level of security, you know, there's as many as 5,000 security alerts that occur in a given year. And the open source community is very active in providing fixes for these various alerts if they do indeed result in a breach of some type of security. But how do you know if that patch applies to your particular product, and if it's available, and how to apply it? And so those are some of the real, you know, troublesome processes that you have to manage if you're going to do roll your own. And this next slide kind of shows that in a visual aspect, right? So this is just 1 year in the life of Wind River Linux in terms of what we've done in managing security alerts. And so you can see we received over 5,000 security alerts. We review each one of those. We have 4 dedicated engineers, so that's an OPEX cost right there that, you know, has to be considered when you're managing a large Linux environment. Of those 5,000 security alerts, we found that 117 of them actually applied to our product. So we work with the community. We get the fixes to these alerts or to these patches, and then we fix them, and then we notify our clients and our business customers that they're available so that they can then download them and integrate them into their product. And, you know, we figure that that's saving them a cost of about $400,000 a year.
Wow. Okay.
So it's a pretty significant effort if you're going to do this and really manage this, and if security is a strong requirement for your particular project.
Right. Okay. We're eating into our Q&A requirements, so I want to try to
We
have some good questions. Maybe you can briefly talk about real time and some of the standards and certifications area.
Yeah, so let's just go to the next slide, because I do want to be sensitive to our viewers' time. So real time is a little bit like security. You may not have any requirements, and you may have very, very stringent requirements. And these are the things you have to consider when you're making your build versus buy decision. If you have stringent requirements, there's literally hundreds of real-time patches that are available in the community, and knowing which ones to apply, how to apply them and test them and validate them, and they can affect the timing of the kernel. They can affect they can affect your system in a lot of different ways. So managing that can be quite complex, and so this is one of the areas where you need to really think about what your requirements are. And, I'll just say briefly, kind of at a high level, if you're looking at 10 microseconds to 50 microseconds worth of real-time interrupt latency requirements, then you're going to probably need real-time patches, and you're going to, you're going to really need to think about the cost of integrating and maintaining and managing that. And then the next slide, really the same thing applies with certifications and standards. So again, if you have carrier grade requirements, if you have EAL requirements, evaluation assurance levels for security certifications, FIPS standards requirements from the government, each of these typically require that you integrate a lot of different packages into your Linux distribution. And, of course, the more of packages that you need to integrate of this complexity, you have to validate them, test them, and then maintain them. And I like to show this slide. This is a slide that's from a government agency, the Government Accountability Office, that actually shows the costs to various government projects for implementing EAL4 level of security. And you can see at the EAL4 level, it's impacted their time to market by up to 25 months, 2 years, and up to $350,000-$400,000 in costs. Now, of course, every project doesn't need this. I'd like to show this to to give an illustration of the potential impacts when you're applying certifications and compliancy of any type, whether it's in the automobile industry or in the networking and carrier grade industry. It can definitely add to the CapEx, OpEx, and to the time to market for a project. If you look at a commercial supplier, you know, oftentimes we'll have a lot of these capabilities already integrated in our product.
And we'll close with the operational expense. I did notice there's a few slides beyond this, and certainly the customers will have those available. Are there any that you want to kind of point, call out in particular?
You know, just the next slide, I think we should just stop at this, and it kind of shows a summary. I really like this because it shows if there's anyone out there that hasn't already started a Linux project. If you have, then you probably know this, but, you know, there's a lot that's involved. And there's, as you've seen down in the lower left, hundreds of patches that you may have to integrate and test and validate and make sure that they work with the version of the kernel that you have. And then you have to integrate all the packages that you have for your file system and build your Linux distribution, you know, make sure that you have the right tool chains that are compatible with the different versions of the kernel and the patches. And then you have your Linux distribution. Then you test and validate that. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, potentially a significant number of developers to do the integration, the testing, validation. And it's only then that you actually have a Linux distribution that you're ready to develop your application on. And then you develop your application using the same tool chains and build environment, which you then have an optimized runtime environment that you can then start to take to market. And this is sort of the life cycle, if you will, in a very short illustration of a typical embedded type of Linux project. And probably should stop there and just go straight to a Q&A.
There are a number of good questions. Again, we invite you to ask your questions. My time is over. This is your time. Let's start with Glenn. Regarding tools for multi-core processors, if you could please discuss what's available from Wind River for VxWorks versus Linux. This is probably a question on a lot of people's minds who may be on a commercial OS and may need to incorporate Linux.
Okay, great. Well, so first of all, from a debug perspective, we have a JTAG hardware assist debugger that enables you to bring up boards, look at the firmware as well as the kernel space and user space. And this JTAG debugger is available for both our Wind River Linux and our VxWorks product. And we have a common Eclipse environment called Workbench. And we have a Workbench debugger that also allows you to do multiple context debugging, looking at different processes or threads, and even different applications at the same time. And that debugger is available on both VxWorks and Linux.
Oh, okay. So you've kind of pulled together the VxWorks world with the Linux world into your tool chain.
We have. Now, where we start to differ is with the analysis tools. So we use standard open source analysis tools on our Linux product line, mPatrol and oProfile and LTT, things of that nature. And on the VxWorks side, we use a proprietary tool set, our scope tools, which provide a lot of the same functionality, but they are they're not open source tools. So that's kind of where we really start to vary and differ is in our analysis tools.
Okay. Here's a question for Steve. What are the key characteristics of engineers focused on when they're making the decision to use Linux? So are there differences between commercial and roll-your-own Linux selection, and what criteria do you hear them talking about?
That's a great question from the audience. Overall cost is a key criteria in the selection process for Linux. for both commercial and roll your own Linux. And there shouldn't be any surprise to anyone. However, looking at the data, there are also, I guess, additional similarities and differences between the two communities. For instance, looking at the data here for commercial Linux, users, in addition to overall cost, are concerned about the availability of development tools and the ability to support a variety of microprocessors. And obviously, the need to satisfy the technical requirements is key. However, for roll-your-own users, in addition to cost, there's a key consideration given to reliability and stability for the OS, and also the availability of development tools. As I look at the data here from the survey, I would say one of the most glaring differences between Linux and just commercial operating systems in general is the key selection criteria is around real-time support.
Interesting. So here's another question for Glenn, probably. Is your O profile interoperable with other Linux distributions? So can you mix and match tools from open source commercial vendors?
Well, yes and no. We use standard O profile from sourceforge.org. And so from that perspective, absolutely, you can use it with other Linuxes or because it's essentially the same O profile. Now, where we differ is when you integrate it into our Workbench environment, where we have a system level view with all of our different tools. We use something called a user mode agent, which is a Wind River agent that runs on the target and provides information back to MPatrol or OProfile or the other various open source tools. So that user mode agent would have to be adapted to a different Linux environment besides Wind River Linux. And it can certainly be done. And that's one of the nice things about, you know, a commercial provider is we can provide the services to help you, adapt that user mode agent to, you know, to a different Linux. And we've done that for some of our clients.
Okay. Here's a last question we have time to answer. It's probably a good wrap-up question. So someone observed that looking at slide 9, it does appear that early development and or proof of concept code can benefit from semiconductor Linux over commercial Linux, especially if its new platform, you know, isn't available or already in use. So I guess the moral of the story there is, you know, sometimes semiconductor Linux is best. Sometimes roll your own is best. I guess you have to figure out your requirements, where you're at in the development cycle.
Yes,
absolutely. There is no silver bullet here, and there's no one size fits all. I think it's a matter of looking at what your requirements are, and making a decision based upon a number of factors that best meet your requirements.
Yep, absolutely. I agree that is the primary benefit of semiconductor Linux is the early silicon, before the various drivers or libraries are, you know, have been fully integrated back, you know, upstream into the main open source kernel. That's definitely where the benefit is. And, you know, one of the things that we do is, you know, work with suppliers like a Freescale or a Cavium or a TI, and oftentimes we'll engage with a customer, and the customer may start on a silicon Linux, and then, you know, they migrate over to a commercial Linux once the project's up and started, and they start doing their application development. They need to go to market. They need to have commercial support for their product, and the semiconductor vendor won't provide that. And so that's why it's so important as a commercial vendor to have those relationships with Freescale and TI and Intel so we can provide that kind of overall lifecycle solution for a customer.
Okay. Well, interesting. I want to thank you guys very much for attending and providing your insights on Linux and the advancing technologies that are out there and what it means to commercial versus roll your own. And I'd like to thank the audience as well for attending and let you know that this eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen as I pull it up here. There we go. And an audio-only podcast will also be made available. You can do a web search with the keyword embedded space e-cast and find all the Open Systems Media e-casts available. Open Systems Media also has a multi-core tech channel. You can see that on LinkedIn or a multi-core underscore tech on Twitter where we follow Wind River and some observations by VDC and other people in that kind of industry if you're interested. Like to remind you to please fill out the survey, and thank you all for attending and have a great day.